for the safety of yourself, and it's really for the safety of the first responders, right? That's really where it comes from. Because if you don't evacuate, you feel like you can withstand, hey, that's on you, really it is. But if you get in trouble, I've got to put people in harm's way to come and get you.
This is Born in the Bend, highlighting local gyms, entrepreneurs, and all-around awesome stories. Growing up here
and starting businesses in downtown Richmond,
we can't help but notice our little Texas town is becoming a hub of creative activity and a tourist destination for folks all over Fort Bend County. I'm your host, Emily Shearer.
And I'm your co-host, Amy Frederick. Our experience as locals and entrepreneurs has made us realize Richmond is on the rise.
And as the county seat and historic heart of Fort Bend, Richmond is the perfect backdrop to bring you stories that were born in the Bend.
Welcome back, guys, to season 5, episode 2 of Born in the Bend. I am with my trusty cohort, come rain, come sleet, come snow or shine, Miss Amy Frederick.
That's me, guys. That's me. Hi, I'm here.
Amy, what are you sipping on today?
You know, I needed a little pick-me-up, and I saw you with your drink.
Yes.
And I said, you know what? I like a coffee this morning, but I need a little extra shot. So I ordered, actually got a latte, which I never do, but I got a little extra shot.
Ooh, did you get a flavored latte?
I did not. Oh, just coffee.
Yeah. Well, in honor of our guest today, I am drinking a Monster Energy drink because that was his drink of choice. If I'm completely honest, Justin and I do occasionally keep these in the house.
Do you?
We do, because as we've all learned over the many episodes and seasons of Born in the Bend, I have a hard time saying no. On occasion, it's not an unhealthy habit. If my mother is listening, I do find myself drinking. It has to be the white can. Has to be the white can of Monster. But that is my energy drink
of
choice.
That's what I was going to ask, if it was always Monster. Or do you do the other ones, like Rockstar?
Rockstar had a white one, a white can. And I swear they've changed something about it. It's not the same anymore. And so now it's Monster. But it has to be the white can. I don't know what it is. So our guest today.
Yeah. Who are we chatting with?
I'm really excited about this because not only did we learn a lot on today's episode, we also got to go on a field trip. So our guest today is Greg Babst from the Fort Bend Office of Emergency Management and Homeland Security. It is a mouthful, but essentially what Greg does, he is our emergency management coordinator for Fort Bend County. And he just keeps us safe from all sorts of things, from watermelons on 59 going just crazy to hurricanes to ice storms and everything in between. This is what he and his amazing team over at Office of Emergency Management, or OEM, do for us here in Fort Bend County. He served over 20 years, I think 24 years, in the United States Coast Guard. He deployed to the Middle East. He has done engagements with Hurricane Katrina, as well as Sandy, just to name a few. He is ready for any kind of emergency. And we are just very excited to get ready, especially as hurricane season is right around the corner. So buckle up, grab an energy drink, a latte, or maybe just some ice cold water, and sit back and relax and enjoy our conversation with Greg today. Much for coming in, Greg. Cheers.
Absolutely cheers.
Today, yeah. With our energy drinks,
yes.
I'm going to have to find a whole to-do list for myself later with all of my energy buzzing.
I'll just try to survive.
So but I suppose you probably have to kind of be at a 10 at all times with what you do.
Absolutely.
For our county.
I would say yes, for running the Emergency Operations Center with the team that we have and the amount of responsibility that the county has on us. Absolutely. Yeah.
When I hear Homeland Security and Emergency Management, that seems like a very big black box building, that it is a need to know basis situation.
I would say portions of it. The Beauty and the Emergency Operations Center was built for the county, and that's a county facility. It is open to the public on a need to know or need to be service type of situation. But the neat thing in that emergency operations center is the command room. The command room is just that. It's for the emergency operations center to keep command and coordination and situational awareness and communication support or interoperability for all the jurisdictions and all the county residents of Fort Bend County.
And I will say, listeners, Amy and I both got to go and tour it. It is like Mission Impossible level kind of situation room. And they have little flags that say, okay, all of our sheriff people and 911 people are going to be over here. All of our logistics people are going to be over here. And everybody has a spot in a zone so everybody can talk to each other, but also talk within their own independent teams. And I felt like Keanu Reeves or somebody, some sort of action star was going to come in and be like, Emily, we need you at the comm. And I'd be like, I'll do it. Just this once. I'm great at logistics. They haven't called back yet on my interview.
We're getting there.
But I understand there's probably a lot of paperwork.
There is a list. Yes.
That has to go through with that. So when we talk about emergency management, yesterday when we did our tour, I learned that it's not just we're at threat level, DEFCON level, whatever, or there is an impending hurricane or an ice storm. There's also a lot of other emergencies that regular people like me and Joe down the street don't have a clue about.
Yeah. So daily function in the emergency operations center, it's manned 24 hours a day. That staff is there providing that situational awareness and coordination for every type of incident that's scalable, right? So as you can imagine, on a day-to-day basis, there are hazards that come within this county. And that to include major road closures or accidents or 911 calls that when not only responders are going out doing their day-to-day jobs, but if there has to be coordination of resources to then support that incident, to stabilize the incident so it doesn't expand. And so that's what the Emergency Operations Center does. And that's what the team does there is make sure that we're constantly being vigilant. We're watching over these said incidents that happen throughout the county and that we are there to command and coordinate as needed and support with resources to cover the county of any gaps that might happen because of an incident.
And as I told Amy yesterday, I didn't even know y'all did have this stuff. And I guess that's because y'all are good at your jobs. Y'all just efficiently coordinate things around me. And I just float through life, assuming everything just works hunky-dory here in Fort Bend County.
And that's our job, right?
And you do a great job at it because you have not, negatively impacted my life. So good. Cheers to you for that.
Thank you. I have an excellent team that is dedicated not only to the Emergency Operations Center, but the safety of this county. I guess when you bring people in, the hardest thing to accept somebody when they're going to take a role in any type of business is dedication. You can't put that into somebody. They've got to want to do it. And everyone in this team, dedicated, want to do that job, love to do that job. All I have to do is say, hey, this is the objective and it happens. So we're very lucky to have the team that runs that Emergency Operations Center.
Well, coming from somebody who only works on team projects, that does sound like a dream team.
Absolutely.
I also think that might reflect poorly when it comes to my interview because I like people around me to do all the work.
Well, maybe you need leadership. You need to take my job because I don't do any of the work. They do it all.
Perfect. Yeah, right? I am a born leader.
There you go. Apply for EMC.
Got it. So obviously ways in which people may have interacted with you guys is going to be on Facebook through events like Hurricane Harvey or that ice storm that I never remember, but I found out they name ice storms. Uri.
That was the big one. And then just recently, Jerry.
Oh, I didn't know that one had a name.
Yeah, the Martin Luther King Day that just happened off the freeze during that weekend.
Huh. I just call them that freeze.
Yeah, that freeze.
That killed my lettuce. Right. what are you guys going to do about my lettuce? Right. You know, and even COVID, you know, you guys have done press conferences. I remember during Harvey, at the time it was County Judge Hebert doing our little fireside chats. And one day I would love for him to do a series of children's audiobooks. Yep, right. But I understand there might be a wait on that.
Right.
But press conferences or things like that, I just recently found out thanks to you guys, there's some storms coming through tonight.
Absolutely.
Like as we're recording, I now know, okay, we've got some weather events happening that I need to be aware of. So it is thanks to your team that just make sure everybody runs smoothly throughout this process. So now that we have a reasonable idea of how the Office of Emergency Management works, we as Houstonians are probably well aware we are headed into hurricane season starting, I think it's June 1st, although I did hear rumors that maybe they start earlier or they they've debated?
Oh, they are in debate right now to start it in May.
Wow.
And extend through November.
So potentially
half the year.
Yes, absolutely.
Some cruises may start going on sale soon. I don't know.
That is the benefit, right?
Let's look at this optimistically.
Yes, I like that.
That we now have half a year where cruises could be on sale.
That's right.
But as school lets out, storm season comes in as far as hurricanes for us typically. I would say born and raised here, for us typically, the first half is usually quiet when it comes to hurricanes. It's usually right as the kids go back to school and usually late August, early September, when we are so ready for those sweet babies to be back on a regular schedule, out of the house, learning, you know, those impressionable minds, we get hit with something.
That's right.
But for a lot of our listeners who are new to the area, hurricanes don't always mean massive amounts of wind and what maybe we think of when we look at Katrina or maybe even Sandy or some of the other ones. Ike even. Yeah, sure.
Or like your coastal regions who really have to worry about.
Well, there's a whole different hazard, right? When you're on a coast versus more inland-based hurricane county that's not a coastal region. So yeah, there's a whole different element that you prepare for rather than the threats that are on a coastal level.
So for people here in Fort Bend County, according to you, the experts of emergencies, not me. I am not an expert in emergencies.
Well, I wouldn't even say like I provide the information from those experts, right? So those experts of the National Weather Service, right? Representation from the National Weather Service comes to the EOC, Emergency Operations Center. And also that direct representation that gives us briefs daily on any type of weather, not just during storms, but on the day-to-day. So like you just mentioned, we notified you of some weather that's coming in tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And it's because of that representation that we have at the National Weather Service. And again, when they tell us those hazards that we have to worry about for hurricanes in Fort Bend County. Now, we always preface that hurricane categories are only based on wind. So everyone says, oh, Cat 2, no worry.
I would never, ever say that, Craig.
Houstonians always say, Fort Bend County,
call
legendary
me when it's a four.
Residents, right? Right. And we understand because a Cat 1, Cat 2, especially this inland hurricane that would hit on the coast at a 1 or 2, by the time it gets to Fort Bend County, it's usually a tropical storm. The wind isn't at that generation. So you really don't have to look at the factors of the wind. What you really need to look at in Fort Bend County is when you see hurricane is how fast that hurricane is moving through the area, not how fast the winds are blowing, but how fast the actual hurricane is moving through.
Like the whole system.
The whole system. If it's moving slow, we are potential for a worse part of that hurricane because it's going to sit over the top of us. That's Harvey. More rain, more duration of wind, more destruction. Now, if it's moving quick, let it go. There's not that big of a concern. So we watch the movement of the hurricane, how fast it's moving, and then how much rain or weather is behind that that's going to then unleash on us because we're going to be over the top of it as a tropical storm. So yes, we worry about hurricane, but really what we're watching in is all that weather on the back end of that hurricane that could be the problem for Fort Bend County. And as you all know, Fort Bend County floods. And we've got some major rivers that run through here and some major watersheds and some major levees. So we worry about the water and what that water is going to do. And can we either pump out that water or can that water move out fast enough so that we're not going to flood or we have to evacuate?
So since we're going to talk about floods, I think back in 2018, 2017?
That year of those.
So we're talking about the Tax Day and Memorial Day floods. For
so you
our
had
listeners.
2015 mm-hmm. and 16, Memorial Day and Tax Day floods. Then you had Harvey in 17. So it was 3 years back-to-back major flooding in this county. And just so y'all know, from a recovery standpoint, a stabilization standpoint, we are still dealing with Harvey, Tax Day, and Memorial Day flooding. I'm still doing buyouts. I'm still doing a lot of mitigation stuff. Almost 8 years later, still dealing with recovery operations.
Well, something I've noticed, and I think is related to Harvey, is for our Fort Bend County listeners, especially the ones that live in Sugarland and maybe travel 99, is there's a lot of levee improvement, fortification work going on over at the Stavanoa Bridge.
And that's all because of those mitigation elements that come with federal dollars to mitigate those risks that we had in this county. The county just went through our office. We just updated the county's mitigation plan. That's at FEMA right now for final approval. And when that comes back, we've listed all the major risks to update after Harvey that we had, knowing that if we go into another incident, those risks are there and we will have federal dollars there to support us.
So I learned so much yesterday, by the way, from our tour.
That's good.
That basically our county has doubled in size since Harvey.
Absolutely.
I'm assuming that has to kind of get calculated in to all of this. I mean, that's more concrete, that's more structures, that's more loss of where water can go.
Right. So you talk about the infrastructure itself, right? On the impact that it has on the ground element for when we're going to be either inundated with rain or disaster, right? But then you also put the human factor in there, right? So then you have a bunch of humans that you've added to this area that usually don't know or haven't experienced something like that. So we need to educate them like you just explained. But that human element also, as people get into a type of disaster, some panic, right? And what does panic cause?
I would never do that.
Right? Right? And we tell everybody, right? Just like your airline stewardess or representation on a plane says, keep calm, right? In the face of danger, we say the same thing. But, you know, we all have that fight or flight mechanism in us. And those ones that like to flight cause problems because they're going to jump in their car, they're going to jump on the road, and they're going to try to get out of here as fast as possible. And I say human element because as we've built up structures in here, have we built out the escape routes through this county?
No, we haven't.
What's our traffic look like on a day-to-day, right?
And
what's
I hope 99? Your escape does not include 99. I was on it twice today.
What's the evacuation route for coastal counties through this county?
Is it through 99?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that where, now I remember Contraflow. Mm-hmm. That was from Katrina, mm-hmm. right? I mean, but we have it here.
We do.
And we used it, I think, during Rita, maybe?
Yep.
Maybe during
I think Rita was maybe. No. Was it Rita?
Yeah.
And it was a disaster, right?
Yeah. For people maybe new to the county or new to this whole concept, Contraflow is where all of the lanes of the highways leave town, basically.
Basically.
Right. Like there's still like so for your emergency services to get in and out.
If we set Contraflow, and I say we, I mean the state, because the state DPS owns that, right? So if they set that into place, there is a mechanism that goes into place to go on the evacuation routes to put officers in every exit and make sure that that entire Contraflow exit is safe before they put Contraflow into.
DPS officers do not mess around.
That has to all be put into place. That you can see that that would take hours, maybe a day or two to get all that clear. Then Contraflow on 36 through Fort Bend County goes one way out. And then also the northern side's a little different. So it goes Highway 6 down to 59, 59 to 99 and out.
I'm glad I don't live there.
Those are your two evacuation routes, and that's for coastal counties. Mm-hmm. And if they set Contraflow, that's what they would do. Most likely, you're probably never going to see Contraflow just because of what has to go into that to set it up. But they will set evacuation through the county, coastal counties, and people will be on those routes to move through our county to get safe from a hurricane.
So we kind of need to, number one, let our coastal friends out first.
Absolutely.
But typically, I mean, I've lived here my whole life. I can't think of a time where I've ever been asked to evacuate. Unless during Harvey, maybe you were in a neighborhood for flooding. You were then asked or required by powers that be to leave.
We go into a type of situation such as a hurricane and there's a disaster declaration. Once a disaster declaration is put into by the county judge or your elected official inside that city limits, mayors can do that also. That goes into state code 418. 418 allows those elected officials to put policies in place for mandated evacuations. So if they feel that you are going to be in harm, and for the safety of yourself, and it's really for the safety of the first responders, right? That's really where it comes from. Because if you don't evacuate, you feel like you can withstand, hey, that's on you, really it is. But if you get in trouble, I've got to put people in harm's way to come and get you. And that's where all that comes into play is to keep those first responders from having to go into known harm's way. And we're trying to evacuate you ahead of time on our best judgment and on the state's best judgment. So that's where those come into play. And we tell everybody, please listen to your public officials. If they are telling you to evacuate, I'm going to tell you there's so much criteria that goes, it's not just on a whim. They're not just saying that county or this HOA or this area needs to evacuate or this precinct needs to evacuate. It doesn't go like that. There's so much planning that goes into that. And it's almost on the other end. They're not wanting to do it because they don't want to tell people what to do.
Right.
But they want to keep people safe. That risk versus gain, it's all based on safety. And they say evacuate, evacuate.
Hey guys, it's Emily here from Born in the Bend, inviting you to come out to A Night in the Garden, April 6th at the Fort Bend Museum. It is going to be an enchanting evening supporting our local history museum, the Fort Bend Museum. And you can find out more information at fbhistory.org. That's F as in Foxtrot, B as in Bravo, history as in history.org. Cheers, y'all. So for the most part, I don't want to broad brush it, we don't really evacuate unless called to.
Correct.
What does hurricane prep in your eyes look like? Because I mean, in mine, it's do we have a handle of Tito's? Do we have enough banana bread? Right. Do we have
hurricane parties, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, do we have enough PB&J right. for the kids? Like, is everybody good? Great. I'll see y'all, you know, out at the grill.
That's right.
Typically, that is what it looks like for me. What things should I be running to my nearest Walmart, HEB, or Costco for that I have neglected on my list of banana bread and Tito's?
Right. So we always push everyone for when they're building out their hurricane kit. What we call it is the 72-hour kit. And I call it a 72-hour kit. Our team calls it a 72-hour kit. Ready.gov calls it a 72-hour kit because it's not just for hurricanes. It's for any hazard. And so you build out this 72-hour kit to have enough services or resources for you to survive for 72 hours, knowing that there's a possibility that you're not going to have first responders being able to get to you if you're in harm's way for 72 hours. So if you have any sort of condition which requires medical assistance, making sure that that stuff is set and prepped ahead of time, right? If you need electrical services to run certain devices, then you better have a generator.
If you need maybe your medication kept at a cold temperature, absolutely. Whether it's insulin or whatever. Yep.
Coolers, all this stuff needs to be set into place. There's also a system out there. You can dial 211, which is a steer system that's ran in cooperation with United Way. And you can get on a list through the United Way and through the Texas Division of Emergency Management. And it's a steer list. And it's for those types of incidents where you have a need, right?
Dialysis, insulin, right,
absolutely.
Something like that.
You go on this list. This list gets pushed to the Emergency Operations Center. Our office has a staff there that starts making calls out right away. Do you need help? Do you need to be evacuated ahead of time? Do you need assistance to help those that need those types of things? So again, that's the biggest thing that we always preface in the 72-hour kit. Make sure you're on the steer system if you need it, and then make sure that you have that stuff in your kit, because that's kind of missed for some reason. People just don't think about it. And then water, a good supply of food, some blankets for warmth.
Which you won't need in September, just so you know.
People say that. And even though it's hot out, if you get wet, something
true.
Like that, right?
Okay, I'll accept that.
Your body can just automatically lose that heat and you can get hypothermia when it's 90 degrees
okay, out. Okay, I'll allow it.
Right.
I'll allow it.
But some of those are some of the things that we really preface in that 72-hour kit. Making sure you have some cash. ATMs ain't going to work. Sliding the card, trying to get into a gas. If you haven't filled up, you're not going to be able to use your card, so have a good set of cash.
And potentially, you might not be able to get gas even if you do have cash. I'm not speaking from experience, except right, I am. Right.
The open
because of power or something might have happened with the pipeline.
Or yeah, so, supply chain issues.
Come June 1st, keep an eye on your gas tank. Keep it above a quarter tank was what I was told. I'm married into a family who is a half tank family. I've been married long enough now that I do get jittery at half tank. Or I suppose if you have an electric car, Amy, you are now a Tesla driver. What does that look like infrastructure wise? Does everybody camp out at Rudy's? But what if you how does that work?
I will tell you right now, that's a concern. That's one of our major concerns.
I didn't mean to bring a damper down.
No, I was going to mention it.
Yeah, there's not an infrastructure in place right now to support the amount of
electric cars.
Houston is actually, I would say, a pretty early adopter of the electric cars. I see them on the road all the time.
I'll come pick you up on my gas guzzler, right. Okay? I'll come get you.
My husband's not worried about it. So check with us after a natural disaster and we'll let you know.
She tells you where to go, right?
She tells me where to go.
I will say, Amy, though, I mean, you did come stay with us during that ice storm. And if my gas guzzler has to come save you again, you know, I'm just saying.
I did. Yeah. We have electric cars and we live in a house that is
Pier and Beam.
It does not stay warm when it freezes. We found out.
I'm a Pecan Grove resident. The rumor has always been, and I don't know if this is true, but the rumor was historically we don't lose power very often during Ike. I think it was maybe 18 hours during the not tropical storm Uri. It was an ice storm. Wish it was tropical, right?
Right.
I think it was a couple of hours. We had just finished cooking dinner and the power went out. And I think by the time y'all made it home, it was back on. So we always heard we're on the prison grove.
There you go.
Is it true?
Oh, it's true.
I am in a safe space.
Well, I live a few blocks from your office, and so I'm sure there's some kind of exterior outlet I could find somewhere.
I'm sure.
To plug my car.
It's probably locked up. Right.
It's a secure building.
Come knock on the door. We'll let
They'll
you
see
in.
You right. before you even try.
Please,
here
please
she comes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Is she bringing banana bread? Don't let her in.
So I have a question about the 72-hour plan. You mentioned supplies, but seriously, real talk about people who are new here and maybe don't have. I mean, I know people coming from cold climates and have been through snowstorms and things have gone without power. But like, what is the strategy or what is the, I guess, the basis behind the 72-hour plan? Is that an indication that most people wouldn't be out of power for more than 72 hours?
The 72-hour is if you get into a type of situation where you're going to need first responder support. You can't take care of yourself or evacuate yourself to get to better care or to get out of the situation. It's going to take 72 hours for someone to get to you just because of the chaos that's going on. And what people don't realize too is hurricanes, since we're in that discussion. As a hurricane is going across Fort Bend County, first responders hunker down because they don't want to be out there in the element because they will get in trouble. So if the hurricane's moving through and it's going to be hitting us at full capacity for an hour, you've got to know that first responders are going to be hunkered down. They prep before that too. So you can say an hour before that during the hurricane, and then it's going to take them time to ramp back up to get out there. Then it's priority, right? It's life-saving, your most critical thing, right? And then property's next. So they're going to go into that life-saving element, start risk guidance. They need to get information from the EOC, especially if it has to do with flood, down power lines, down trees. Is there road blockage, right? Then we've got to get road crews out there. So you can imagine that's why it takes 72 hours for all this to happen, because there's people in very critical condition. And then we start risk mitigating and getting that.
So it has nothing to do with power outage. No. So that's not a guarantee.
It's not a guarantee.
No, that you will only be out for 72 right. hours.
You know, our partners with CenterPoint, they are also in.
Those linemen right? do amazing things.
And when they know that there's a known hazard about to happen, they stage resources. We know where those resources are. We've gotten communications with them. We are able to help and guide that through that incident. And they provide us that data. Again, it's getting back to that stable state as fast as possible. And they help us with that.
We've got the food, the water, the medicine, the steer program. I would say for hurricane prep, you want to put some sort of like DEET or something in that case.
Because mosquito repellent.
The number one thing that loves a hurricane and all that water is a mosquito.
And that just spreads disease too. And that's something people don't think about.
And my helpful hint that I did share yesterday so you could be educated is copperhead stink.
Yeah.
Water moccasins smell. If you smell something skunky, grab a shovel. So like just that. Saying. This is your helpful hint from your resident Texan. I learned it during one of the floods. I've never been so scared before in my life. I don't do snakes.
One thing that I will mention too, important documents.
Yes.
And having stuff deployable. So we always tell people to either get a 5-gallon bucket with a lid on top of it. And this is what you put your 72-hour kit in, or a big cooler that has a lid that you can latch down, put all that stuff in it, because you don't want this stuff to get wet. You don't want it to get moldy. You don't want it to get it destroyed, right? So again, having something that's deployable, you can pick up, throw in the back of a car, and watertight. And then I was talking about the important documents. That is crucial, right? Insurance documentation, right? Everybody kind of puts that to the wayside, but that is one of the most important things that we always tell people. You better have something that's protected of water, putting all those important documents in there, insurance papers, bring, you know, your social security cards, bring passports, bring all this stuff,
yes.
right? Put that in that and then have that ready to go to throw in the 72-hour kit if you're taking off.
If you're evacuating or that it is safe in case it floods. I had an aunt that worked with FEMA. They said, yeah, if you don't have your insurance stuff, you need all of those things. The second you hand the government those pieces of paper, they can work miracles for you.
Absolutely.
But you do need that information, license, social, passport, or whatever it is.
And that insurance is extremely key. Like when that federal agency comes in, if you're at a declaration level or a state element comes in, they need that information to help you. The clock starts ticking once the disaster happens, and they're only going to put out a certain amount of time where they're going to provide you assistance. If you delay that and you miss those deadlines, then you are out that service because the federal dollars are only going to be there for a set amount.
Speaking of federal dollars, you told us about a program that you guys utilize at the county level yesterday, which is how can we, the public, if we have damage, if we have been negatively impacted by whatever emergency, you guys have a resource out there that you need fulfilled. Can you walk us through what that is?
Absolutely. So it's a state-run program. We use it within Fort Bend County. We call it the iStat survey. It's individual survey test that we send out, and we need that data or that information for people to quickly fill out that survey, because that tells us the amount of damage that's in the area. Everything when it comes to a disaster, if you want to declare to get those state or federal dollars to support us, we need those surveys. If I do not have surveys, it's hard for us to understand the impact to Fort Bend County. And if you don't want delays in that disaster declaration where federal or state dollars are going to be here to help you and help us recover, if you can provide us with these surveys when we push them out, either on our website, fbcoem.org, or usually our social media, because that's what everybody lives on today, right? So
would we ever receive those via text directly?
We can. So in a major disaster, right, we've got a mass alerting system in the EOC, and we would push that out on that mass alerting system to get that support.
So it's called the iStat. iStat, like, yep. I individual, not S-T-A-T, like an eyeball.
And that's the state of Texas's survey system for individuals.
And that is a huge part of getting funding to help the recovery effort.
Absolutely. And it's as simple as, especially if you're a smartphone user these days, mm-hmm. right? We won't put people on Androids, right?
We got a few of those on our phone. I'm sure we do,
right? It's all smartphones, right? Yeah. Not just the iPhone, right? But if you have that smartphone device, it's so easy. You click on that application, it opens it up, and then you can take some pictures of the damaged area really quick. You fill out the information, basically ask your address and the impact that you had. And then that data is then funneled in through our county and then to the state. And then we use that data for collection purpose only for the incident. And it stays with the incident. It doesn't go anywhere else. It's protected by the state. All that information is protected by the state. We don't ask for anything that would be critical to you.
No social security number, something like that.
So if someone is doing that, do not do it. Do not fill that stuff out and make sure it comes from a reputable source such as the Emergency Operations Center.
So that's crucial to receiving or declaring a federal or I don't know, the regional disaster or whatever.
Absolutely.
What do you call that? A state of emergency or I don't know. What are the terms?
You've got basically two levels of declarations that we go into for prep when we know it's a major type of situation that's coming. Hurricane, I can go into emergency declaration where we stage assets and we use federal dollars or state dollars to stage those assets. Then once the incident happens, that's when we start collecting all this information. If we meet that major disaster declaration level, the judge can then declare.
I guess I never realized, like, I've heard those words and that language my whole life because, you know, I've lived in South Louisiana.
Everything's an emergency.
Yeah, but it's tied to funding.
Absolutely.
So I guess I never made that connection. Yeah. Right.
Resources that are being used on a not normal scale. Then we start equating all that information or all that data when it comes to dollars that we are using resources that the, let's say, taxpayer dollars mm-hmm. can't support. We use that data and then we use all that data of damage to total a number. There's thresholds when you come to, sure. to federal dollars and state dollars. So do we meet those thresholds? And then once we meet those thresholds, the county then gets reimbursed and we're not using county dollars that we were
now
budgeted
using kind
for,
of this emergency funded.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's the key takeaway is that you need that information from our residents.
That really helps us.
So respond to those surveys.
Absolutely.
So as we kind of wrap up all of the emergency and disaster things, I asked a question yesterday that I felt was very important. I don't know if any of our other listeners out there feel this way, but go ahead right now. If you're listening, raise your hand if you feel triggered by HEB sometimes when you turn a corner and we have 8 aisles of water or we have no bread left. And there's a reason behind it because they are in frequent talks with emergency management.
Yes.
They actually do have insider information.
Right. When you're dealing with not just emergencies themselves, but emergency planning or emergency guidance, there's plans set in place for supply chains, right? Mm-hmm. And that there's an emergency support function out there that allows us to create committees, and we talk on a weekly basis on disasters and planning elements on a disaster level. Absolutely. We would be talking ahead of time and making sure that we're ready and they're ready, right? Because mm-hmm. they've got to be able to stage resources or stop stuff from coming in because they don't want stuff to be destroyed. So they're a huge element in this, and that's major industry, right? That's your Amazons, your Walmart, your HEBs, your Krogers, your major industries that support life mm-hmm. in this county. So constant talks with them, and we call it the supply chain group.
So it's right to be triggered. We maybe need to be aware.
Oh, absolutely. Right. When they fill the aisles up with toilet paper and water,
be
right?
aware.
COVID's coming.
Maybe head over to Facebook or your website yes. and see, is there a major event about
yes,
to happen?
Absolutely.
You know, I think of my brother, they don't do TV in their house. I don't know if they do the newspaper. They're not on social media. I'm like, how would you know? But you know where they do go. They go to HEB.
Absolutely.
So they are okay right. as far as a weather vane kind of thing.
Yeah. And if they don't do any of that, right, and they want to stay old school, you can tune into AM 1670.
I didn't know our radio station. AM radio still works.
Absolutely. Right. So that's our tertiary means of communications, right? So if all systems go down, we have AM 1670 throughout the county. You can tune into AM 1670. That's our weather or emergency broadcast that we put out, and we give guidance and advice that we would normally do on social media or our websites. If those go down, that's where everything's funneled.
Is this like the robotic automated voice? Like,
kind of, not really. They've gone away with that. Like, we actually have somebody in our office that provides that.
You can do that. Okay,
we got to put my
there we go, right? We'll bring the podcast over. Yeah. You guys can run AM 1670.
I love it. We're up for the job.
Okay.
So another thing that you have coming up soon is you guys have a big event to kind of let the public know how to be ready. And I think it's even basically called Fort Bend Ready.
We're very excited about this. It's never been done before in this county. First year we are hosting this. We're doing it in correlation with Hurricane Preparedness Week that starts that next week, the first week of May. So we're going to kick that off with our expo. That's April 27th, which is a Saturday. It's at our fairgrounds, the Fort Bend County Fairgrounds. I was just at a meeting before I came here with this, and our team has gotten roughly about anywhere between 40 to 50 vendors that are going to be there.
Wow.
There's going to be a blow up park thing for kids to enjoy, that kids face painting. And then we have a host of people that will be giving constant information about all hazards and being ready for that. I think it's every 30 minutes, someone's going to be up on stage doing presentations there. So again, getting the county ready for hurricane season.
So it's a great way, if you didn't get everything today from the interview and you've gone to their website and you say, but I need more to feel secure and safe.
If you want to build out some of these 72 hour kits too, they will be passing out a bunch of that information for you.
Do you have a vendor that will just make me one?
Probably.
Great.
In fact, sometimes we pass out buckets that are all ready to go, and we will be having a raffle for that stuff.
Clickable link something from Amazon. That's right. Would be great. Make it easy for
me. Like an Amazon wish list, but it's your Amazon hurricane list. I love it. Amazon, are you listening?
You could Google that.
You probably could.
72 hour kit and it's there.
So it's a great way.
I'm going into business.
It's kid friendly. Bring the kids out to the fairgrounds. Yes. Learn all about how to prepare for hurricane.
It's an all day thing.
It's from 10 to 2.
Before it gets too hot.
Yep. Our website, fbcoem.org. That's where we put a lot of our information. It has everything to do about the Emergency Operations Center, preparedness information, ready.gov links are on there. Also, it's got our links to our social media sites. So we have Instagram for the kids and everybody else who likes pictures and wonderful things like that.
And that has clickable links. I think you said you're on Linktree or something equivalent.
Absolutely. And then we have our Facebook, which is Fort Bend County Homeland Security Emergency Management. And then we have Twitter these days? X.
It's called X. Right. We can't get on board yet.
I still call it Twitter. Either.
Right.
Me too. We're showing our age,
people
guys.
People look at me like, you're so old.
One cool thing I've always found about X is how real time it is. Are y'all pretty real time?
Real time. Absolutely.
So I can go to your X and get updates.
If we're getting information, that's where we're sharing it. And I will say this, we've got applications inside the EOC that makes us very efficient. So when our public information officer is sending something out, she can put it in the system and it hits everyone. One of them all at once. So we're like influencers.
Do you have a TikTok?
No.
Not yet.
Right. And growth the state mindset. Of Texas really looks it down on that in the government.
So too bad, Emily.
I don't think we'll ever have a TikTok.
Man.
We just recently got on LinkedIn though.
Okay.
We are on LinkedIn now.
Showing your age again.
Absolutely.
I
got to go somewhere when I want to get, you can apply there. This is where we put our applications.
There we go. I'll update my LinkedIn.
There you go.
Any other information we may need to know? Any helpful hint?
What we tell everybody is always be ready. Because if you can take care of yourself and you can respond for yourself, that allows us to understand that people are at least ready. And again, we do a lot of public awareness and try to get people ready. But I will say this. You can't just put it in a box. You can't just put the information on a shelf. You have to test it, exercise it. So as you build out your 72-hour kit, run a little exercise with the family and say, hey, if we have to evacuate, where's the 72-hour kit? Who's grabbing the 72-hour kit? Now what's my evacuation? How do I do that? Can we drive it out and run the evacuation route a little bit? Be ready for that. We tell everybody again, a plan is only as good as it's exercised. And so exercise your plan, be ready, and then put the human factor in that. And this would everybody forgets. As you're taking care of yourself, look back. Do you have a neighbor? Do you know somebody that could potentially be in trouble and can't take care of themselves? Look out for them. I get kind of emotional when we talk about this stuff, because we've almost lost that, I would say, in the human nature. And it's especially in the United States, because we're so fast, right? Everybody's moving. I've got my agenda. I've got what I need to do, but we've got to be able to step back and take care of each other. So look out for your neighbors.
Yeah, love your neighbor, man.
Love that. Well, Greg, it's been fun, but I know you probably have more fires to put out.
Absolutely.
Do you need to check your phone?
Yeah, I have been. I've been looking constantly out, and I even put it on silent. I never put it on silent.
Hanging out with this guy. Right. I'm on high anxiety. It's just like, ugh.
Well, thank you so much for giving us your time and all of your wonderful knowledge. And we look forward to seeing you out at Fort Bend Ready.
Thank you.
Episodes of Born in the Bend are funded in part by Develop Richmond.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Born in the Bend podcast. If you could, head over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. We would love 5 stars. We want you to follow Born in the Bend on Instagram at Born in the Bend. And for show notes, partnership opportunities, and more, visit us at borninthebend.com. Born in the Bend is produced and mixed by the team at Speakerbox Media. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. Cheers, y'all.